Okay, Shalom Aleichem. Welcome back, everybody. Great to see everyone, and to at least see some faces and names. Hope to be spending a little time learning on an important topic today. So this topic actually has been on my mind for over a year, but I just thought that it'd be more relevant. It's more relevant today than ever to discuss, and that is the topic of rabbis. Please start talking
Rabbi,
issues. Yes.
I put in for sponsoring this year's
Yeah,
meeting.
yes, absolutely, Mr. Siegel. Thank you for reminding me. What I usually do is I'd usually just talk about the topic first, and then I talk about the sponsorship.
Okay,
But thank you
thank
for the
you.
reminder.
Sorry.
That's fine. So the topic is going to be rabbis, please start talking issues. And this is an important topic that relates to some very important issues that are at hand in general, and specifically and generally as well. And what I'd like to do is first of all, to thank our sponsors, to thank Barbara and Jack Siegel, who are sponsoring today's shiur. I just printed it out over here, but for some reason I'm not seeing it in front of me. To thank them for sponsoring in honor of two yahrzeits. Jack's sister's yahrzeit is the 6th of Cheshvan, which is
Yesterday.
which was yesterday, which is Sima Bas Eliezer Zisha HaLevi, and also for Barbara's father, Yosef Meir.
Alexander, Ben Al Alexander Zisha Halevi.
Bas Alexander Zisha
Sorry.
HaLevi, and Barbara's father, Leilu Nishmas Yosef Meir Ben Mordechai HaLevi, which is tomorrow. Is that correct, Barbara?
Tomorrow night, yes,
Tomorrow
thank
night.
you.
Tomorrow night will be the yahrzeit.
Thank you, Rabbi.
It's also happens to be that there is another little Alexander in the world this year around because of the little grandson who was born and named on Shmini Atzeres, who had his bris on Shmini Atzeres, who is also part of the namesake of Alexander Zisha Levi, which is very special. And it also happens to be, I believe it's Mordechai's anniversary just around now as well. So it's all full circle
What a good memory.
on
That's
all these
today.
wonderful dates. So Baruch Hashem, we should have
Thank you.
continued nachas, Emes Hashem, from the children and
By the way,
Emes
Rabbi, did
Hashem
you
for the.
also know that today's Rav Meir Shapiro's yahrzeit?
Ah, the Lublin Rav, Yashar Koyach. So yep, Emes Hashem, we should learn Nishmasai. Okay, so thank you very much for sponsoring being part of this. I'd like to talk about a complex topic, and that topic is actually based on it's a playoff of a article which was written about a year ago in the foreword, and the topic of the article was, "Dear Rabbi, please stop talking politics from the pulpit." So the topic of what we're going to be learning is, "Rabbi, please start talking issues." So let's jump to that for a moment. I did send out source sheets just a little while back to the Chevra on the email chain. If you did not get them, please let me know after Shir so I can add you to the email chain. In the meantime, what I'm going to do is that I'm going to I'll just screen share in the meantime because that'll be the easiest way to look at some of the ideas. I'm not going to look at all of them in writing as well. So here we go. So the article has a lot of interesting points. It's written essentially in the following way. It's just the first paragraph is pretty inclusive. Rabbi, I think you're great. I love it when you talk about Torah, when you introduce me to the spiritual insights from the past generations, when you invoke the values of our ancient tradition. I even like hearing you make appeals in Yom Kippur and the various Mazel Tov announcements. But when you talk about politics, I wish you would just sit down and shut up. So this article is written anonymously, but let's get to a few of the important arguments. So number one is he points out that he says, although you may be knowledgeable in Torah, in holy books, you are, he said, this is a very sharp sentence, but when you veer away from Torah and politics, you are an Am Haaretz, a boor. You are uniquely ill-informed and, forgive me, totally wrong. So the argument that is made in this next paragraph is, not everybody in the shul votes the same way, so why are you telling us how to vote? Why are you telling us what the right way to vote is? And he goes on to say, it's true you need to sensitize us to the plight of our brothers and sisters in the land of Israel and the moral obligation to save them. He says, but that doesn't mean to say you can take tragedy, but when you invoke the latest tragedy to support your interpretation of how I should vote, I want to stand up, stomp out of the sanctuary and protest in protest. And I know that as I sit in the front row, no one will mistake why I'm leaving. So he says he writes this under a pseudonym because he does not want to insult the Rav, and he respects all the incredible pastoral work that the Rav does. And I love coming to the shul, but if you utter one more word about how you want me to vote, I won't come back to shul. And he says, and how is it a good thing for you to alienate dedicated members of the shul like me? We will just end up going to another congregation where people think just like us, further contributing to the polarization of the Jewish people, the very same baseless hatred that has historically plagued us since the destruction of the temple 2,000 years ago. So Rabbi, if you want to teach us Torah, if you want to sensitize us to become better Jews, even if you want us to give us a little Musar, let's have it. But please, leave your personal political opinions outside. We need more space where we can focus on what brings us together as a people, not what drives us apart. Plony Alamoni is a pseudonym for an active member of an Orthodox Jewish synagogue who knows a lot more about politics than the rabbi. So just to think about this in an article which was written a year ago. Of course, this is definitely red meat for the Forward, which takes pride in these kind of articles. But there's just to start off as an important point is that to a large degree, there are many very correct points here. And that is that, you know, that it is actually illegal for a member of the clergy to talk about voting for a particular side or another. So if let's say a member of the clergy in any faith were to get up on the pulpit and say everybody needs to vote party A or party B, that institution could lose its non-for-profit status, because that is illegitimate to use the platform of a non-for-profit status for the forwarding or the furthering of a particular political agenda. So that's number one is on that side as well. And to a large degree as well, the author is correct in the sense that certainly not every shul has a monolithic political perspective, and therefore the rabbi's perspective on sharing or demanding something from that would be illegitimate. So there's a lot to think of. It's a very thoughtful article. At the same time, there are a few small bones I would like to pick and start off at the beginning. One thing I do take a little bit of umbrage on is suggesting that the rabbi is uniquely ill-informed and totally wrong to express a political opinion. Now, you know, it may be true that the rabbi may not be a political science major and may not have the best view of politics, but to say that he is below average of the regular analysis, I think is a little bit going a little far. After all, the rabbi is the one who has to spend hours upon hours on calls with the local politicians and the state politicians and the federal politicians, or whenever anything is happening. So they are actually quite much more in the loop than anybody who's simply waiting on the outside reading the news circuit. But be it as it may, the reason why I think this is a fascinating topic is, and by the way, there happens to be this particular anonymous author does happen to know a lot more than the average rabbi. It happens to be. But it is not necessarily the case of we'll call it, you know, average congregants. It happens to be that this person is a very knowledgeable person, very well-respected person. What I'd like to address is perhaps some of the pitfalls and perhaps the place of religion in the conversation. And that is number one, is this the danger, the flip side of this article, is the danger of allowing, so to speak, the rabbi to become the fiddler on the roof rabbi. And for those of us who haven't watched Fiddler on the Roof recently, in a certain sense, the fiddler on the roof rabbi is the rabbi who's called in when all else fails. You know, we don't really know what we're generally doing everything we need to. And then the rabbi, you know, we'll call him in when he has to say something about the czar, you know, or we'll call him in when the sewing machine needs a blessing. You know, or once the expulsion of the Jews, Anatevka, has happened, then the rabbi will say a short and pithy statement. But the rabbi is not a leader. The rabbi is simply a rubber stamp for making us feel good about our religion in general and our business and making sure that things are all right. That type of rabbi is not the type of, I would say, rabbi or religion that we should be sort of subscribing to. It's a very narrow perspective. It's a very much a secular perspective as to the role of religion in the more complex life, you know. So we'll deal with things. And, you know, when we have a sewing machine, you know, rabbi, you come in and you do your thing, right? That's kind of the we'll call it the Anatevka rabbi. I was actually, you know, if you focus and you spend a little more time and noticing how Fiddler on the Roof presents the rabbi, it is very interesting to think about that particular issue. But more saliently, is that if you think about it very carefully and very deeply, rabbis, and I'm not going to say rabbis particularly, but I would say perhaps Torah. Does Torah have anything to say about politics? The truth is, the Torah doesn't really take a stab at politics. You know what it does talk about? It talks about issues. And it's important to notice issues because sometimes you forget that that issues are more important than politics. So, for instance, you know, when it comes down to abortion, does the Torah have something to say about abortion? The answer is absolutely. Does Torah have anything to say about environmental preservation? Yes, it does. Does the Torah have anything to say about, as an example, a social welfare? Yes, it does. Does Torah have anything to say about free industry? Yes, it does. But do all of these issues line up on the same side of the aisle in American politics? No. Which means the Torah has something very important to contribute to issues, not to politics. It may be that some of the issues will land on the right side of the aisle, some on the left side of the aisle, and sometimes on neither side of the aisle. But it's important for the Torah to inform the decisions we're making because we're not voting about politics, we're voting about issues. And in fact, one of the things that is so painful today is that no longer are issues being discussed in Congress. It's not about issues whatsoever anymore. It's simply about politics. One of the things recently I had the opportunity of being on a conference with our congresswoman, who's a very wonderful congresswoman. And that's one of the things I mentioned is that why can't we have discussions about issues? Why can't it be that any vote is not divided down the middle of the aisle? Why can't there be votes from one side to the other on particular issues? Why was there not a single person showed up for the hearing last week as to whether there could be a vote for the next for the replacement of one of the Supreme Court judges? Not one person from the other side of the aisle appeared even for the vote. We're no longer having discussions about issues in Washington. And in a certain sense, Judaism has a lot to say about issues. And we should be informed about those issues, not about the politics. But let's take a little further. I'd like to address it from the perspective of the following two questions. Question number one is the Torah and its perspective on day-to-day life. Is there space? Is there ground which is neutral that the Torah has nothing to say about? That's question number one. And question number two is the role of religion in uniting, we'll call it Isser Veheter and regular life. So for this, we're going to take a few fascinating sources which I think are incredibly important to notice. So we're going to start off with a very interesting question, and I mentioned this actually over Shmini Atzeres. The question was a question about a sefer, the placement of Sifrei Torah. For those who are there for B'nai Chamar, I thank you for doing a little chazara with me. He has the question that is asked of the Ritvaz, or the Radvaz. This is now a 500-year-old question, and here's what he's asked. He's asked the following. She'ela, Lama na'agu l'hamid ha-sefer Torah mu'umad v'alai mushkav hu yoyser tov shekein hoyu haluchos ba'aron? He's asked a very basic question. In the architecture of a basic shul, you will notice that, in fact, we put our Torahs in B'nai Ashkenaz, we put our Torahs standing up, but why do we not put them lying down horizontally? After all, in the Torahs, in the Luchos, in the Ark, the Aron of the Luchos Abris in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Luchos were laying down horizontally, not vertically. And if our shuls are meant to be a commemoration, are meant to be a reiteration of that, then surely they should follow suit. A lot of very fascinating background to this happens to be dependent on the Machlokas of Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam as to how Sifrei Kodesh should lie. Very interesting discussion. Here's what the Radvaz says. Teshuva, here's my response. She'ela zo nishala lifnei Ari, Rabbeinu Tam zichronim livracha. V'she'alta lama ayin mashkivin ha-sefer Torah ba'aron kamoya luchos, yafe she'alta v'Rabbeinu Tam pirush b'teshuva, she'kachu yoser tov, mitam ze v'ilu nizkarti, k'she'asisi ha-aron hirchavti ad kan. So Rabbeinu Tam was asked this question, and he answered and he said, you're right. If I had the opportunity of making my own shul, I would have made the Aron a lot deeper and I would have laid the Torahs down horizontally because that would be the more appropriate of positions. That's what Rabbeinu Tam suggests. Wow. So Rabbeinu Tam says, good question. Says the Radvaz a few centuries after that, V'ani ro'eh b'chol gililos Yisrael mi'mizrach shemesh ad nevo'oi, no'agu l'hamidoi oimeid u'milag avosenu Torah. So he says, but I look around and I don't see a single shul in which the Torahs are in fact horizontal. They're all vertical. Happens to be in the Bell's Base Midrash in Yerushalayim, I believe they put the Torahs horizontal. But nonetheless, we'll call it 99.9% of shuls around the world, the Torahs are vertical. In fact, in the B'nai Edut Mizrach, the Torahs actually are leaned from when standing. In B'nai Ashkenaz, they're at a slant on the Bimah. Fascinating reason as to why. But nonetheless, in the Aaron, they stand. Lufirach, nearly, it seems to me, debishlam aluchois, lav lekriya kami. When it came to the tablets of the covenant, they weren't for reading. They lufirach, mushka voice ba'aron. They were laying down. Aval sefer Torah lekriya oimed, umishum hachi bo'inan shiye munach, muchan likrois boy. So says the Radvaz, what's going on over here? When it comes to the luchos, they're a symbol. They're an eidos. They're a testimony to an idea. But the Torah is not a testimony to an idea. The Torah is lekriya kaimi. It is there to be read. And if it's there to be read, it needs to be, so to speak, on the ready. Ready to be taken out, not lying down. It's there to face us, to be taken out, to understand. Rabbi Norman Lemon, a very beautiful drasha in 1965 on Parshas Bechukei, elaborates and he talks about this notion metaphorically of the Torah standing to be read. He says that there's the businessman who wants to know the decision of the Torah on price collusion, and the house officer seeks instruction on how to treat a maid. There is a young man who is interested not only in the morality, but also in the ethics of courtship, and the government employee who wants to know how far he may go in accepting unofficial gifts. Halacha can yield such guidance. If we do not know all the answers of halacha, it is because we need scholars to search more diligently and a greater scope and depth than has been done heretofore. But nevertheless, the greatest majority of the problem that occurs to us can, without new halachic research, be dealt with decisively and lucidly by Torah. Our Torah is an upright one when we make the decision to consult it in these practical problems. This indeed is the difference between an ideal and a principle. An ideal is an abstraction to which we offer our gesture of respect. A principle that which governs our very real conduct. A principle is that which governs our very real conduct. The luchos are the symbols of ideals. The Sefer Torah is a principle or guide. We have no dearth of ideals. We are sorely lacking in committing our lives to relevant principles. If our Torah is to be a Torah, it must be upright, ready to use. What a very powerful idea. So he's taking the response of the Radvaz. The Radvaz is saying the idea of the Torah, Likriya Kaima, which is standing, ready to be read, to be taken out, says the Radvaz, as opposed to the Luchos, explains Rav Norman Lam metaphorically. What does that mean? It means that the Torah itself is not meant to be a beautiful symbol that we pay credence to and we kiss it on the way out and, you know, and we listen to the Torah, hopefully, and that's it. No. We have to be reading it, we have to be learning it, we have to be applying it, we have to be asking. So just to expand upon this, the Torah talks about issues, many issues. The Torah is not the Torah of the Rabbi of Anatevka, which is about blessing sewing machines. It's about the way we live our lives. And to fail to understand that, to perhaps overlook the fact that Torah talks about issues, is a great disservice to the religion that we are living. Let's take a little step further. Is there in fact a middle ground? I mean to say, could we just say like this? Okay, so I understand the Torah comes out and the Torah is meant to inform and elucidate and regulate our lives. But surely that means to say, and we'll call it the parts of life which remain, we'll call it Isur Veheter, Tumah Vatara, right? Mutar V'Asur, all these aspects of life that I understand, that's when the Torah has a say in it, and that's when I consult about it. But what about what we'll call the neutral territory in life? So famously, it is interesting. The Chovas Levavos, which is attributed to Rabbeinu Bachaye, says that in fact, if you look at all of life, let's take a quick look at his language over here. It's a very powerful language. He says, this is to make this smaller here. Vihine nechluku maase b'nei adam elatoy velara. All of human action can be divided into good and evil.
So
He says anybody should make a decision, therefore, about whether the action they're about to perform falls in the bucket of good or the bucket of evil, as David Melech says, "Chashavti derachai v'ashiva ragli." And he points out, and he says, and he goes, brings a raya from Koheles, a proof from Koheles that everything is either good or evil. Now, it happens to be as part of a much longer chapter, Perek Dalad and Shara Avodah Elokim, so it's taken out of context. But the general principle seems to be, is even when a person decides they want to get an ice cream, even when a person decides they want to go on vacation, which we'd put in sort of the gray territory in between. It's not asr, it's not mutter. As long as it's done in a correct way, it should be fine, right? He says, no, somehow it is either good or evil. There's no neutral. That's a very powerful statement. Think about that. Think about all the neutral aspects of our lives where we don't feel religion has a space in. But he says, no, it's binary. That's very, very strong. Is that the accepted opinion all the way around? Truth be told, not necessarily. Let's take a quick look at this. This is the most remarkable, remarkable suggestion of Rav Kook over here in the Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara in the very, very, very beginning of Brachos, the Daf Beis and Beis, says the produces the following machloikas, that there's a machloikas, Rav Yossi Omer, Ben Hashmoshos Kerif Ayin, Zenichnas is a Yotzer, V'yashal Amorilah. There's a machloikas as to how long Ben Hashmoshos is. Ben Hashmoshos is twilight, as it should be patently obvious, certainly here in America. When the sun sets, it's not dark. It takes a little bit of time for it to be dark. There's different degrees of dark. In America, generally speaking, Rav Moshe Feinstein Paskins that it is 55 minutes in New York after sunset that it is actually Tesa Kochavim, fully dark for all intents and purposes. So that's why we take our Shabbos then. So that is following Rav Moshe's Psak in Eretz Yisrael. Obviously, it's shorter, it's closer to the equator, and so therefore the amount of time of twilight is a lot shorter. In Israel, the time after Shabbos is about 34 to 42 minutes, depending on the locale or the Psak. Anyways, so there's a machlokes in the Gemara, so to speak, as to whether or not you say this or not. Do you say there's a twilight zone, or do you say no? The moment it's day, up till the end of the day, it is day, and in the moment that the sun sets, it becomes night. It's machlokes. He says, Nira litain remez, says Rav Kook, I would give you a hint by machlokes, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, in this dispute between these great Tanaim. Im yesh lamod al zman ben hashmoshos, oy ein shir murgash klal ben hashmoshos. Do you say that there's a time of twilight, or do you say that it is one or the other? V'yesh lamod pi derei chazal b'medrash, v'yikra Hashem l'or yom, elu ma'asem shal tzadikim, v'lachoshech kor alayla elu ma'asem shal rishoy. We read a week ago in Bereishis that Hashem called light day and night and dark night. So the Midrash says it doesn't just mean light as what you can see and dark what you cannot see, but it refers to the actions of human beings. Good actions are called light. Bad actions are called dark. It's a metaphor. The Chavis Levavos had a question. Is there neutral ground between positive commandments and negative commandments? Is there a neutral decision which is not in the category of either being good or evil? And he decided, he suggested there is no middle ground. That means to say, if I need it, if it's necessary, if that vacation is important for my existence, then it's a mitzvah. If it is not important, if it's excessive, then it is actually falls into iser. Wow, that's what the Chavos Levavos was saying. Omnam. He says, I would question this. He quotes the Ravad, an earlier contemporary, in his book called the Baal HaNefesh. He says, there is a neutral territory which cannot be prescribed as bad or good. This is the dispute of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. Shekevan shelayla ramez lema'asem shel rishayim, v'yom lema'asem shel tzadikim. Im kain, ben hashmoshos shuma mutza, ben yom laila ramez al inyan rishus. He says, if we look at night and day, think about this for a moment. Night is action, negative actions. Day is positive actions. Is there space in between? The opinion of the Tana who holds that there is a ben hashmoshos, there's a twilight zone, says that there's certain actions which are not good and not evil. They're just in between. Right, you know, whether I buy that ice cream, whether I have that extra course in the meal, whether I go on a vacation, all these decisions are not good or bad. They're neutral. They can be elevated, but they are certainly not evil because they're extra, or they're not a mitzvah because they're not extra. Whereas according to the other opinion, that there's no such thing as twilight, That means to say that it's either white or black, it's day or night, it's good or bad. That's the way that it's being described over here. So Rav Kook points out that just that this particular topic happens to be a matter of debate. It's interesting, as an interesting aside, the Balei HaNefesh, that's the Rav who he quotes as the Bar Plugta, as the arguing colleague of the Chavos HaLavos, Rabbeinu Bachaya, actually does make a suggestion in terms of how we deal with those neutral areas. So as an example, he says when you're eating, it's a good practice, he suggests, to leave one piece of the food on the side of the plate. Right? So he says, don't like, you should be in control of your food. Try doing that. It's not so easy. Right? Not just the crust. We're talking about, you know, something which you really want to eat. Leave, you know, 1/8 of the food on the plate because it shows you're in control of it. So the Rav certainly understands that you have a lot to work on in that area, but he would still not call it a mitzvah or an aver necessarily. This particular topic obviously is relevant as to whether the Torah prescribes this, that we'll call that neutral territory, that twilight area in our lives. That's what a cook would say. That's in terms of the neutral area. You want to take it one step further. If you want to try to understand what's really going on over here, there's other examples in the Torah of where this is important. So as an example, the Torah tells us the following mitzvah in Devarim. It says, you should do what is good and what is straight in the eyes of God. So like, what does that mean exactly? Like, what's the mitzvah telling us to do? Like, can we write down summary? God is asking us to do. So how do you finish that sentence? He wants us to do the good and the yashar, the straight and the upright and the good. What does he mean? What does he want from us? Says the Ramban, commenting on this particular mitzvah. V'zeh inyan gadol. This is a very important issue. Lefi shi'i efshar la'azkir b'Torah kol hanagos ha'adam im shechenov v're'ov. The Torah cannot go down to every single neighborly interaction of a human being. And every way, every business deal that they will make, and the way to regulate the welfare, and nationally, after a number of these were suggested, as an example, not tail bearing, not to take revenge or bear a grudge, not to stand by where others are being hurt or being killed, lest the kalel cheresh, not cursing those who cannot hear, figuratively and literally, mipnei seva takum, standing in front of those who are elderly, those who deserve respect, v'kayotze bohen, and similar mitzvahs that the Torah describes, chazar lomar, then the Torah came as a returned, so to speak, at the end of the issue to say, b'derech klal, as a rule, shiyase hatov, Vayashar b'chol davar ad shikones bozeh hapshara lifnim mishura sadin. And now the Torah goes on to say, I'm going to give you the rule. The rule is lead a good and straight life. Lead an upright and honest lifestyle. And so therefore, he says, ukegoin, mashi is kira b'dinah debar metzra. There's a case in the Gemara in Bava Metzia and in Bava Basra, which is called Dinah Debar Metzra. What is that referring to? So it refers to, let's say, you have a person who is now selling their land. They have to give first dibs to the person who's their neighbor. Dinah Debar Metzra means the person who shares a border. Why? Because that land is worth more to the neighbor than it is to a real estate developer coming in from another state. Why? Because now, if it's the neighbor can take down the fence and expand his fields. He can expand his territory. So there's the expectation to give the first rights of sale to a neighbor. That's Dinah Bar Metzra. The Gemara says, where do you know that from? So the Gemara says, Vasisa Yashavatov. That is an upright thing to do. That's an honest thing to do. That's the way we lead our lives. Ramban says, this is not a mitzvah which regulates a particular action. It regulates, we'll call it, a way of life. The Torah gave us specific examples. The Gemara expands on those examples as the example of Dinah Debar Metzra. But there are numerous other examples of that as well. Which means to say that, yes, there may even be that neutral territory. Let's even take it to the perspective of the Ravad, that there's no, that it's not black or white, it's not day or night. There is that twilight zone of neutral action, but even in those neutral actions, there's a lot of space for, we'll call it, being yashar vatov, in the terms of, this is called the social interaction. There's another mitzvah the Ramban talks about, which is also more holistic. There's another three mitzvahs that Ramban talks about, which are more holistic. Kedoshim Tiyu is a holistic one between us and our Creator. This is Yashavato, is between us and our neighbors. clearly more expansion needs to be found. And a lot of these cases actually depend on advice, depend on trying to work out what is the best case in these situations. Now, I do not want to get into, and I don't have time to get into, the topic of what's called Da'as Torah right now, which is a phraseology which has been used, which literally means the knowledge of Torah or the position of Torah on things. For this, there's a lot of articles which are worthwhile reading. Lawrence Kaplan has an article, Rabbi Beryl Wine had a response, Rabbi Alfred Cohen has a discussion on this. There are a lot of different discussions about Da'as Torah. There are a lot of essays written on this particular topic. Much, much more complicated issue. Who has Da'as Torah? When did it develop? What's the parameters? How? What about errors that are made? Very, very complex topic which requires its own discussion as to who has the right to, so to speak, express what the Torah has, and we'll call it a gray territory. But suffice to say, I just do want to quote one little point that Rabbi Wein does point out in his article, which he wrote in the 1994 Jewish Observer. He just a very short and very into his very sharp way of saying it. He's responding to the Lawrence Kaplan article, and he says, insightful analysis, honest opinion, and good advice on either personal or communal issues are hard to come by in our world. Whom should we ask? The professionals who attempt to run Jewish life, the politicians who lost our trust long ago, the thinkers and scholars whose private lives and public persona are less than exemplary? Where should one turn for advice, for counsel, for background and perception, perspective, and an historical view? The Jewish people have always found their heroes, mentors, and guides amongst great Torah figures. It is the arrogance of the 20th century secular scholarship-oriented Jewish world that allows it to think that somehow the concept of Da'as Torah is irrelevant to our modern educated society. Very sharp words over there. What he's pointing out is that yes, there's a lot of gray area, and we need to work out what to do in those gray areas. But who are you going to turn to in that? Like, who has the Jewish people always turned to in that? Now, it might be that there's certain people less worthy than others, but Torah scholarship has always been the place that the Jewish people has turned to for this. Whether or not you want to say that the term Da'as Torah is new or not new, whether it was, the way it is being used today is different to the way it was used a century ago or not, but still, unequivocally, that is always how it has worked. It happens to be a debate as to how far this goes. So if you take a step backwards, you know, the Igros Kodesh, the Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi, in his letters in the 22nd chapter, points out, it's a very, 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 very interesting letter. He says, Ahuvai, my beloveds, Achai v'Re'ai, my brothers and my friends, I'm going to tell you with a love inside and expressed rebuke, meaning to say, don't take this as an insult. You need to look back and really do an analysis on yourselves to look back how things worked. Has it ever been the case that you ask about inyanei gashmit, which means to say, what color you paint your house, you know, what business deal to get involved with? Was that ever the topic of asking the rabbis, the Tanaim and the Amoraim? I shall call Raz who have these great intellects, these spiritual intellects, kim l'neviim mamash, asher yolifnei Yisrael kishmul aroeh. When do people ask trivial matters, says the Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi, to the Rabbanim, to the great sages? When they were prophets, not when they were the sages. Those were not their topics. Their topics were, so to speak, spiritual endeavors, and something which is completely gashmit, something which is disconnected from the spiritual world. That was not their purview. That's one perspective. Why are the Hasidim asking the Rebbe where they should buy their house? Or that actually might be an interesting topic of what color their house should be. As an example, where you should buy your house has a lot of significance. Schooling, shuls, neighbors, a lot of interesting things that one should think about in these kind of things. On the other hand, the Me'iri on Maseches Avos points out that it describes a person who's a Talmid Chacham, and it says the following. A person learns Torah, gives them, so to speak, dignity, gives them an air of leadership and kingship. Dichsiv ki melachim yimloichu, says v'chei nitan gamke na oskim balishma, those who study Torah for its sake, umamalchus amemshala liyosloi lemoneh, Does this person should have their own portion? And that person will be chosen as a leader. That person should be complete in their characteristics, and a person who is righteous and just. In order that they should be able to lead their community to the right place, and to the perfection. In all matters. B'chol inyanim does not mean to say just if the chicken is treifer or not. Let me say, b'chol inyanim, says the Meiri, is in every aspect of life. So if you look throughout history, happens to be there's different degrees of where you put that pin on the spectrum as to how much into that neutral territory the Rav representing, so to speak, the Torah perspective, it has been and should be and is invited in to consult upon those issues. Again, not politics. Issues may dictate politics at some point later on, but the idea of the issues themselves. Let's take it one step further. For this, I'd like to do and learn together the most profound set of words together, and we're not going to do the whole thing, but one excerpt from a remarkable speech which was given in the year 1940. The year 1940 was a complex time. Here in America, Rav Yosef Soloveitchik has now just reached, is at this point in time entering the American scene, and he hears of the passing of the greatest Torah sage of the generation, recognizably the leader of all of European Jewry, whose name was Lithuanian Jewry, and that was Rav Chaim Oizer Grodzinski, the Av based in Vilna, one of the great leaders of the time. And he wrote a beautiful hesped, a beautiful eulogy for Rav Chaim Oizer Grodzinski, and he published it in HaPardes, which is one of these Torah journals at the time. And it's a very, very beautiful eulogy. It's really worthwhile learning and reading the entire thing. But there's one aspect of this eulogy which I think is really relevant to us. This, again, is Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, at this point in time, is living in Boston. We'd like to just to appreciate the powerful metaphor that he leaves us with. He says the following: Shnei begadim mi bigdei hakohen gadol hudgashu beyoter biyachas lehis to udo samal yedei hakosov atzitz vachoshen. So the Torah makes great emphasis in two of you the unique garbs of the high priest that so to speak are, you know, we'll call it emblematic of him being unique, and they are the tzitz and the choshen. Right, remember that a regular Kohen Hedjot has four garments: the pants, the tunic, the belt, and the head covering, the mitznefes. The Kohen Gadol has above them four sets of clothes, right? So they are the ephod and the me'il, and the tzitz and the choshen. The tzitz and the choshen are the ones that have gold in them, they have the choshen has gems. Those are the notable ones that the Torah makes emphasis on this. So he says, tzitz. That's the head plate. He bears it upon his forehead. The choshen, I'm just going to skip the psukim here. He quotes the psukim. He talks about how Aaron bears on his chest the names of Israel and all of those different stones emblazoned upon his chest. He says, each of them have a different purpose. Hatzitz, hoimaratze al hatumois. The tzitz would atone, would appease for impurities, transgressions on impurity. Hatzitz hoya kula kodesh l'Hashem. It was all pure and holy to Hashem. Hatzitz hoya nosan al mitzchoy shel aron neged, merkaz aseichel v'adas. Where was it placed? Upon the forehead of the Kohen Gadol, by, the so to speak, the seat of the cerebral intellect. Hachoshen hoya lev aron. But the breastplate was upon his heart. Merkaz Ahava v'achiba liYisrael. It was the place where he had, so to speak, metaphorically expressed his feelings and his love of Israel. Kol shemas ha'shvatim hayu charusim olav v'akosuv koreo sam choshen mishpat. Instead of the name of Kodesh Hashem, it has the names of the b'shiftei Yisrael. Mishpat b'nei Yisrael masur hayu b'lachoshen. And it was called choshen mishpat because the Kohen would judge Israel, so to speak, socially he would judge Israel when wearing it. When Israel would come in front of the Kohen Gadol, he would answer questions about whether it's mutter or asr, tamei tohar, b'chayev v'potur, hatzitzoya poisek b'oil zoruk v'shmei oil, b'tumas maso, b'tumas even mesamet. All these complex, we'll call it halachic entities of when it comes to I'm at Tumen Tara and carrying on Shabbos and oil and mace. Hatzitzo yapoisek halot hilchos bilchos aguna kedushin gitin hilchos migoy v'heilach v'tarevus v'treifus v'ksamim v'damnida. And the tzitz was more giving psak in what called the ritualistic aspect of Judaism, the aspects of Yoredea, Evan Ezer, marriage and gitin. Hachoshen yapoisek b'sheres u'ba'yos misug echad legamrei. This is all the tzitz was up to now, was all ritualistic. The question had different questions to answers. Ale or lo ale? What's that question? That refers to the question when Bnei Yisrael said, should we go to war now? Should we fight against, should there be civil war between the tribes and Binyamin at the end of Sefer Shoftim? That's the question that it was asked. Ale ale elchom b'sonei ze, or lo ale? Should we fight against this enemy or not? So how should we as a nation act? Should we act against this nation which now did not come through on its pledges to Israel? Should I fight against them or not? Should we make a public standing about against the insult of Israel or not? How should we react to this new modern invention which seeks to potentially unravel part of the traditionalism? Should we go up or should we not go up? That's the question. The question would answer. How should a Jew act in public? Those are questions that belong to the question. How should I prepare my actions? How should I speak? How should I announce? These are she'elos elu hanagois bevas enosh shel Knesset Yisrael. These aspects of what we call public policy are related to the choshen. Ha'yaniv sakois al yedei ha'choshen, shoyal leiv Aaron, which was on the heart of Aaron. Leiv ko'ev, a heart which was pained by machove amoy, with the pains of his nation. Leiv margish es tzoras ha'uma, the heart which felt the pain of that nation. Leiv mitztayer b'tzarom shel Yisrael, which held the pain of that nation. Bayos musubachois v'chamurois ka'elu, nifsakois ho'yu al alei ha'urim v'atumim, shoyim irin es tzorachei ha'uma, u'misnamim es tzorachei. They would be informed by the name of Hashem found in the folds of the Choshen, which would lighten up the hearts of Israel and dictate the way to act. V'klal yo b'yodeinu b'meshach alfei shonim shel golav v'nidudim. We have a rule throughout our golus and our continual transitory stage. Oysa HaKoyen, that priest, Shoyolavush b'tzitz HaKodesh, who would wear the lofty tzitz on his forehead, Shoyomaratzel HaTumah, which would atone and appease for Tumah, Shoyopoisek b'shir k'samim v'mikvois b'eruvin basar v'cholav, that same Kohen who would deal with the ritual aspects of Judah, that is a mikveh, nida, eruvin, basar v'cholav, Hayanishal b'urim v'tumim. When you would ask him for the urim v'tumim, oisa koyin oyo gamkein poisek v'kaveh masmerim la'alocha b'chol habayos hachamuros shel ale oy loy ale. That same coin would be the one to say, what should national policy be? Should we fight this war? Shel milchama v'shalom, of war and peace. Shel tikva v'yush, of hope and of hopelessness. Shel yichuseinu l'umois ha'olam v'lishilton, and our foreign policy. And that same priest, whose head, whose brain was saturated with the ideas of teachings of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer, shall Abaye Varava, the Amoraim of Abaye and Rava, shall Rambam Varava, shall Abayez Yosef Varamo, all the poskim throughout the generations, Hayaroya Baruach HaKodesh Pistron Kol HaShelos HaPolitiyos HaOmdos Al HaPerek, would also be the one to advise, even yes, those political questions which were Oymed Al HaPerek, which were waiting on the precipice. B'chol HaVayas HaOylam HaZeh, B'chol HaTviyos HaOylos Al HaPerek, Tamid Bili Heref, would also answer those questions which arose about the mundane aspects of this world. Oysa Kohen Bal Tzitz HaKodesh, that priest who wore the holy tzitz. Bala alocha v'agoda, he siat saved if name elochim. He peeled tachina if ne gedoy le'olam. He would be the one who prostrated himself in front of Alexander the Great. Hishtateya hishtamesh pam b'berochos, b'pam v'akshanus, v'chizkas alev. Sometimes by strength of character, sometimes by being obstinate in strong standing. Lifrakim sismosoi ha'yisa alta le'bechoma. Sometimes he would say, it's not the time to be strong. Lifrakim, and sometimes yarog v'alyavo. It was to stand your ground, even at the greatest cost. Ba'al amoya chazeh, the one who had this great intellect, hazach amolei v'nigadush yediyos ha'torah, which was filled to the brim with the knowledge of Torah, yagam ba'al alev ha'poemu margish es ikas achiv, who could still feel the pain, the burdens of his brother. Po'eske shelos b'yoredea posku shelos v'orachayim ha'politi. Those who were asked the questions of ritual in Yeradeah, that section of Shulchan Aruch, were also asked about the day-to-day life, the political day-to-day life. Chamuras v'nsuvachos, choshen ha'mishpot shel ale oy lo ale, oy oysa choshen ha'mishpot shel shach v'ataz. It's also very, very, very powerful. There's much more to be said, and he goes on to describe what's happening today. With today, there's been a attempt to drive a wedge between those two. Let the rabbi only be, let Torah only have what to say about the basav achol of this teaspoon and the mikvah, and let the rabbi not have, or let the Torah not have the right to say anything in any other domain. I will go so far as to say, to take it one step further, even in the domain of halacha as well. I'll just take an example, and I know people are tired of hearing it, but Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked a kashayla many, many years ago in Pittsburgh about there was a vada rabbonim. The rabbonim had a certain amount of decisions about the community. And there was a person who decided he wanted to bring in a new heksher into town. And the question was, they felt that it was not going to be good for the town. They felt that it was not going to be good for the kashrus of the town. And they said, well, do we have the right to say that they can't come in? And Rav Moshe turned to him and says, Kol mili de isura olai aramyo. That every aspect of isra v'heter is upon your shoulders. You bear the responsibility for the good and the bad of the isra v'heter in town. And therefore, you have the right to say whether or not a new heksher comes in. I, monopolies, I, public policies, I, free market. Rav Moshe said, that's the domain of the rabbi. Kashrus is the domain of knowing that. It's not the people who spend the times in meetings for hours and weeks upon ends to try to help the kashrus of the community should make decisions about the kashrus of the community. That's their space. And I think that even today, that even within the domain of Isra V'Heter, there's no longer a space. We no longer feel the appreciation of that role. And so I think this to me is a very timely topic, especially now. I would say it's especially now. It's interesting to me how sometimes we, including myself in it, we sometimes say, you know, why don't the rabbis talk about X? You're like, why aren't the rabbis saying something about masking, right? Like, we should make the whole community mask and say all the stores should mask. And that's true. And many of the rabbis have. We have written many, many letters. At the same time, that's only asked when it comes to public, we'll call it health, but not necessarily other aspects of spiritual life in the community as well. It's an important question for us to ask. I think perhaps part of the fallacy or the danger of the article is to say that really Torah, and I'm not trying to promote rabbis, but Torah itself or those who represent it should have a very limited space and place to exist. And the Torah doesn't have so much to say about other aspects of politics. The Torah shouldn't be defining Democrat or Republican, but the Torah should be talking issues. And we should, I think, in our lives, be willing to ask, to be willing to open up, willing to discuss the important ideas of how the Torah informs. And that doesn't mean to say that there's one right answer, and it doesn't mean to say that any person has the only correct answer, and it's not monolithic, and it's not uniform. But there is what to say. The Torah has what to say on a lot of these aspects. And it's as Rav Soloveitchik said about Rav Chaim Ozer Grodzinski, the merging of the tzitz and the choshen, the mind and the heart, and we'll call it the ritual and the mundane of life, is part of the role of the Torah. And it's our role, it's our expectation to, in our lives, invite in Torah to both those parts, that it shouldn't just be an eidos, that it shouldn't just be a testimony lying in the ark in the Beis Hamikdash, but rather the Torah, which comes out and faces us and informs, enriches, engages, and challenges our lives on a day-to-day basis. I thank you very much for taking the time. Are there any questions or thoughts?